streets don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your hosts, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back.
Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. Today is May 9th, 2012. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, the streets don't love you back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes as we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have a great show for you tonight. We have Miss Melissa Kerr. And Melissa's an author of poems and stories that'll make you laugh and enjoy the romance of love. Melissa is also a wife and mother, an elementary school teacher, a book reviewer, and an editor for a publishing company, as well as being a published author. So we're going to hear her story tonight. And before we get Melissa on the line with us here, we are going to welcome Boyd to the show.
Yes, we would like to thank everybody for tuning in every week to the show. And we would like to just thank Ms. Melissa for staying up tonight. She's calling out of Michigan, and it's kind of late over in that area. And we're just thanking her for being on the show, and we're just looking forward to you all hearing her message and what she's doing positive to not only help herself but give back to help the youth and others. So without further ado, we'll pass the mic over to Ms. Melissa.
Oh, hi. Thank you so much for having me. I do so many different things. I wear so many different hats. As a mother, I have two of my own children, and I am part of a blended family, so I have two stepsons. And then, my day job is where I work with about 38, 40 different first and second graders, where I spend the day teaching them about the love of reading and writing and math. And then I come home and I do editing and blogging and writing. And I've recently had two books published, and I'm going to have two more published in June. So I like to keep busy.
That sounds great. So we would like for you to let the viewers know about your books that's out now and tell them what your books is about, and let's get into that.
Okay. Well, my first book is a part of an anthology. It's called, the story in the anthology is called Forever Love. The anthology is titled Love Again. It's written by Ruby Lioness Press. And the story basically takes place in a small town in Ohio, a girl who grew up in this small town and decided to leave the small town. And her father became ill, and so she had to come back and take care of him. He had Alzheimer's. And, she had thought she had left that town behind and left that life behind and came back and found the love of her life. A lot of my stories deal with second chances. And so that story, Forever Love, features the character of Sydney Vincent, or Sydney Wilder, and her sister is featured in one of the stories that I have coming up. And her sister, Stacy, has a beach romance where she also has left this small town and comes back. My story that's out right now that's hitting all the charts is called Second Time's a Charm, and it tells a story of a lady who had a horrible divorce. It was kind of emotionally abused during this divorce and found a chance at finding love again, but with a really strange twist, she ended up finding love with her best friend's ex-husband. And so it's kind of a tale of, could that really happen? Could you find romance so close to your heart? And it's really a nice tale. It's heartwarming, and it's available right now on Amazon and everywhere for only $1.99.
Sounds good. And can you let the viewers also know, Ms. Melissa, where you come from, how you grew up, and what got you into book writing?
I'd be happy to. I'm originally from Ohio. I'm not from Michigan. And, there's a big rivalry here. I don't know if you're familiar with it. There's the Ohio State fans in Ohio and the University of Michigan fans in Michigan. And for my longest years, I was in Ohio growing up and writing stories and writing poems, just being a part of that that lifestyle, and then got married at a very young age. I graduated high school at 16 and then ended up getting married at 18, and we moved to Michigan. It was kind of a culture shock for us because you go from being a Buckeye fan to a Wolverine fan. And then I started, you know, having children. I was a stay-at-home mom and writing while my kids were at home. I would write on, you know, the internet about different interesting topics that, you know, interested me. And finally, after my kids had grown up, I went back and did more writing. I created a lesson plan for character traits, to use character traits with real literature and American literature as a part of my work, where I work. And that was so exciting and thrilling that I decided to do what other things I could write, and eventually came up with a novel. So now I live in Michigan, and I've been teaching now for 13 years at the school that I'm at, and have been working with students from a variety of ages, from kindergarten all the way up to sixth grade, and really love being able to help those children every day. So kind of the story of my life and how I got started with my writing.
Right, and I saw in your bio that when you were a teenager, you wanted to be a rock star or a model.
Yes. Who doesn't at that age, right?
Well, writing's not a bad thing. That's
no,
a great
no.
thing.
No, I mean, I used to put on shows with my sisters. I have four younger sisters, and we used to put on shows for my parents. You know, you'd rock out in the basement and, you know, pretend to lip sync to the music. And
right.
I mean, I never was going, there was no American Idol. I wasn't going anywhere, so.
I think that's the dream of all young children, to be a rock star or a model or something big.
Yeah, now, I like to tell the students, and I always, I mean, I believe that you can never stop learning, so I like to tell them that I'm not done yet. I may still get that job as the race car driver. So
there you go.
Watching for me.
That's right.
You know, it's another area that women just hadn't explored, and I was very fascinated by Cha-Cha Maldowney. She was one of those funny car racers. She did a lot of the straight tracks, and she didn't do the Indy. And I was excited by that and thought, hey, you know, I can do that. But, you know, I just never got into it. It's more practical, raising children. But I always tell them, I'm not done yet. Maybe I'll be that race car driver someday.
Definitely. You never know. So many things that you can do out there.
Well, and I think that's an important message. You know, I mean, I don't want to tell anybody that they can't try.
Right.
So many things that they could do. So
that's right.
That's an important piece.
So how old were you when you realized that you had a love for writing and storytelling?
I probably noticed it more in high school. So I was probably about 16, 17 years old. We had to take typing classes. I mean, if that gives you any indication, I'm not a spring chicken. We didn't have computers. We didn't have this type of environment that our students do today. And we had to take the typing class. We had to do the home row keys and practice, and we had to get so many words done per minute. And I was doing that, and I was writing stories. You know, it was a dark and stormy night, and I'd just write these stories and type them off and give them to my friends.
Right.
And I worked on the high school newspaper and the yearbook and wanted to be a part of that type of writing. And I tried my hand at quite a few different things. Wrote poetry, the sappy, really, really sappy love stories, you know, the roses are red, violets are blue type of thing.
Well,
I still have all those, just in case I ever want to
right.
look at them again, be reminded of what I did. But, you know, it's one of those things that you can't put away. You know, you may stop for a while, you may not be the focal point, but you can't put it away.
Definitely. I know you brought back some memories when you said that typing class, and I could just picture our class all set up with typewriters back in high
yep.
school. Yeah, we didn't have computers or anything. We had the old-fashioned typewriters.
Yeah.
The days.
Those were the days, yes. And you,
had
you couldn't even correct.
No,
you had to use that self-correct tape. Oh, it was a mess.
Right, exactly. I was also the I was a newspaper editor for our high school and was in journalism and did all that as well. So I think that's why I enjoy doing what I do now is, you know, you learn all that while you are in school, at least a lot of it, I think, and it sticks with you.
Well, it gives you a chance to explore different things. I mean, I did a play in junior high. There was that acting. Of course, part of my scene, I was the bad guy in the play. I threw a rock, and it went off the stage and almost hit somebody in the audience. So that was my one-night stand. I was not going to be a good actress. I knew that. So.
Now, Melissa, did you grow up, you know, we talk a lot we talk a lot with people who have had problems in their lives and were able to change their lives and maybe didn't have all the nicer things or, you know, struggles. Did you ever have any of that growing up or, you know, what was your biggest struggle?
Well, I mean, I think, let me describe the town a little bit where I grew up. There were three main industries. Your family either worked for the air traffic controllers. This was during Ronald Reagan in the 1980s when air traffic controllers were all shut out and locked out.
Right.
Your family either worked for them or your family worked for Ford, you know, one of the major auto workers, or your family worked at the steel mill. And my dad was a steel mill foreman. And he went to work swing shift every single day. And he would, you know, sometimes work the midnight shift. The next day he'd work the day shift. And he was in that plant pouring that steel. And my mom was a stay-at-home mom who was employed at the steel mill, but when she got married, she was forced to leave her work because it was back in the day where you can't have two people in the same company
that
were married. So here's my mom who's frustrated, who's staying at home raising five daughters, and my poor dad who has five girls, you know, was taught how to hunt and fish and do those kind of things since I was the oldest. And then growing up, just a normal type of things until I was probably about 21, 22, maybe a little bit older. My mom suffered a cardiac. It was an unexplained cardiac arrest. She was washing her hair one day, and when she had a cardiac arrest, her heart stopped. There was no heart damage. There was no stroke. She was in a coma, and they didn't believe she was going to make it. And the story that is told about this is just amazing. Like, while she was in the hospital ICU, my dad's priest was brought in with a heart attack. And while he is sitting in the ICU, you can see his bed across the ICU. His family is all surrounding him, and they're saying, you know, he's an elderly man. They're saying, you know what, you've had your time. You can go now. Just let us know when you get to heaven. He dies. My mom wakes up.
Wow.
Now, of course, you know, then she suffers brain damage still because, you know, she had been without oxygen for a period of time. So it was that retraining and that changing of positions between the whole family. Going from a mom to she was almost like a teenager, a child herself.
Right. At the time
I had, you know, a couple of my sisters were still living at home. I was married, just having my first child, living away from home. It was kind of an interesting dynamic dealing with a parent who, you know, through your teenage years, you and her didn't get along very well, to now somebody who she felt you were like her savior because you were somebody outside of the family.
Right.
So it was interesting. Some of the other things that, you know, dealing with growing up, I mean, there's always, you know, family health illnesses and even dealt with my own health issues. When I turned 30, they found a lump in my breast and, you know, I had to have surgery and, you know, it turned out that it wasn't major, but it was one of those big scary things being a new parent at this point, you know, having two children and kind of being scared of, I was also going to school at the time, getting my degree so I could teach. There was a whole lot going on.
Right.
but I think, you know, I try and use some of those things. Like, I did go through a divorce, so the story about divorce kind of bring those feelings back up and want to show that, you know, there is that happiness afterwards. That things
right.
can be positive.
Definitely. Yeah, divorce is not the end. Sometimes it's a good thing. You can move on to better things or different things.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I've talked to my children about it now that they're more adults, and we've had those conversations of, you know, did I do the right thing? What would you do? Because you want to kind of get that feedback, and they've been really responsive and said, you know, that's probably a good thing. We both are happier, and we recognize that, and we're happier
right.
for that. So.
Right. I think it makes it easier for kids when they can understand that and understand that they can still love you both. It doesn't mean that, you know, they have to choose one or the other or, you know, anything like that.
Well, it was hard there for a while because, you know, they just did feel like they had to choose one or the other. I mean, we had
right.
some pretty harsh days where, you know, my daughter refused to go to her dad's house. But now that they're more mature and they've grown up, I think that they have that better understanding. She even lives
right.
with her dad now full time because she feels like she can take care of the house because he's not there very much. So.
Right. Well, that's good. And how old are your kids? I know you have a mixed family now. You have kids
yeah.
and your kids.
Yeah, like I said, they're all in that teenage, young adult age. So my daughter is going to be 22 in another couple of weeks. And my son is 19. He'll be 20 this summer. And then my two stepsons are 19 and 16.
Oh, wow. All older teenagers.
Yeah.
So what kind of struggles do you see with your kids and their friends at those ages nowadays with the things that are going on in the world?
Well, a lot of it that you see going on, I mean, it breaks your heart. You know, tonight I was talking to a former parent trying to help her because she's had some issues with her son, and I'm thinking, you know, he's only in third grade, he's like maybe 10, and I'm getting the feeling like maybe he needs somebody to talk to because he's depressed. And I didn't recognize that in my own daughter until she was cutting, you know, and she attempted suicide, those type of things.
Wow.
I know that there's gender issues. When my daughter was younger, she really was wearing the goth clothes, and, you know, wanted to do the piercing, you know, purple hair. And I didn't have a problem with it as long as I understood where she was coming from. But even just walking down the street with her, people would shout out of the cars horrible things to her.
Right.
And they didn't know who she was. It was just with the way she looked.
Right.
My oldest stepson works about a half hour away from our house. And his boss, who's an African American, says he's afraid to come to certain neighborhoods our way because there's such a high concentration of racial hatred in some of these areas.
Yeah.
And I feel like, what? How is that happening?
Right. It's there still, even though I don't know. I think it shouldn't be after all these years of change, but it's still there.
Yeah, it's surprising.
Really,
I like to, when I taught the older kids, we always went to the Henry Ford Museum, and the Henry Ford Museum is one of those places to visit with children because it's got things like Rosa Parks' bus, and so you can sit in her seat. You know,
right.
It's got some interesting information on the different segregation. They have the examples of the drinking fountains. They have the examples of, like, a waiting room. And to really put it out there to the kids and say, this is what life was like, it kind of gives them a better understanding.
Right. There's definitely still a lot of struggles out here, you know, with so many different issues. And, you know, I have a youth group now with some of the high school kids out here, but, you know, we had a meeting with them the other day, and they shared some of the stories of their home lives, and it, you know, you look at them, and they're smiles, and you wouldn't even imagine, but once they start sharing some of the things that they've gone through or that are, you know, things that are going on in their families, it's like, wow, you know, and we need to get down to the kids of the ages that you're teaching, because it definitely starts when they're little.
Yeah, it really does. And it's, you know, they don't understand, and they're repeating sometimes what their parents say. So it's important to give them that other perspective to say that's not okay.
Right.
I think the biggest thing has been bullying. I mean, that certainly is the new norm, where kids feel that they're not accepted by their peers. And I'm surprised at how early that happens. You know, I can see it even in first and second grade.
Right. Yeah, there's just so many issues. You know, what do you see with the kids in your classes as far as, like, the bullying and things like that?
Well, I don't see so much of the bullying. My school has worked very hard to establish this character program that they've disseminated that allows, you know, teachers to incorporate character in a variety of different ways. Like I said, one of the things was the programs with literature. So we talk a lot about character. We do a lot with role-playing. You know, I think that it's also those social norms that we've missed growing up. You know, when we used to have everybody with their grandparents close by, it was like a village that raised the town. You know, I think back to when I was younger, if I got, you know, speeding ticket, my mom knew about it before I got home. She probably knew a police officer, or she probably heard about it from somebody who saw me there. It was known. Today, nobody wants to bother in anybody else's business.
Right.
And nobody wants to talk about those things.
And, you know, we have to talk about those things in order to get to the root of the problem, and that's what's wrong today. My wife said, I think education and educating these youth starts at a very young age, really when they first born, you know, all the way up to, you know what I mean, their adulthood, because you can't not fade away from educating these kids, because if you do, down the stretch, it's going to cost you as a parent and cost society as a society. So we have to take hold while they're very young.
Yeah. It's amazing, though, how many children feel entitled to certain things these days. I find that's very different than when we were growing up. They almost feel like they deserve certain things. Well, everybody gets a car. Well, everybody gets cell phones. Well, everybody has this. And I can remember very clearly in high school one time when one of the girls who was a cheerleader didn't have the, you know, famous Jordache jeans and was like targeted for that. You know, you can't be a cheerleader. You're wearing the same jeans. You're not doing this, you know. And I remember thinking, that's so stupid.
Exactly.
And yet,
it really is.
That's what we're still facing. We're still facing the kids who take a look at somebody by what they're wearing, or that they have to have those $1 million shoes.
Right. Mm-hmm. And they fail to realize that the person who has a lot in life, you know, they'll work hard for that to have them kind of shoes. You know, they didn't worry about no shoes while they was trying to make it and get educated. What they was worried about was education and having something in life down the stretch, you know. And like you said, that's the problem nowadays. Kids see the homeboy next door get a car, they think they supposed to get a car, you know. A man down the street get a pair of Michael Jordans, he can run home and think he's supposed to get a pair of Michael Jordans. You know what I mean? But mom over here trying to pay bills and things, you screaming Michael Jordans. You know what I mean? If you want Michael Jordans, well, then you need to go to McDonald's or Burger King somewhere and get you a job. And then mom and them probably don't mind you getting a pair of Michael Jordans because you work for them Michael Jordans. You just running in the house trying to get something. So you got to teach kids self-reliance at the same time as you're educating them too, that everything don't just come from mom and dad all the time. You have to go work too, you know?
Right. Well, and even for some kids, they think that education should come so easy to them. They've been told all their lives they're smart. And yet when they reach a struggle, even in the field of like education, they can't read something. They think they're stupid, and then, or they sneak and lie or cheat in order to get ahead. And what we need to teach them are ways and strategies help them overcome and let them push themselves through. Still such a learning curve for them.
Without a doubt. And what advice would you give these young kids out here, Miss Melissa, that's going through that stereotype now from not only a teacher's point of view, but from a mother's point of view?
Well, the biggest thing that I can talk about is that they don't know what the other person, their life is like. You know, when they sit there and they think about that other person that is sitting there wearing those shoes or is sitting there with all of their things, they don't know what that other person might be going through or what that person has done in order to earn that. They just see it as that's what they want. And so they shouldn't give up trying to earn things that they want. They shouldn't give up on themselves, but they also need to understand the perspective outside of me. You know, the kids get very caught up in the age up until 26 because their brain isn't developed, the prefrontal cortex isn't developed, and they get very caught up in that, this is what I want it now. But they're not willing to look at, you know, maybe what that other kid did. Maybe, you know, they worked really hard, mowed grass all summer long, you know, gave up all their summer vacation in order to earn those shoes versus, you know, just a kid who enjoyed his summer and didn't have anything.
Exactly. The kids that work for their things appreciate them more, you know, versus
oh,
kids
I found
that
out. Yeah, I found that out real easy. Think about college. Kids who have to pay for college versus kids who parents pay for college. When my mom was paying for my college, I was failing. The minute I had to learn how to pay for my college myself and work for it, I had straight A's.
Wow.
And that makes a difference. I don't want to waste my money.
Exactly.
I want what I worked for.
Exactly. You own it. It's yours, and you take care of it.
Yeah, that's the other piece. You take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I watch the kids with their cars, you know. If they're borrowing mommy and daddy's car, they leave their garbage in it. If
right.
they're driving their own car, they're outside vacuuming it and washing it, and they're taking ownership of it. That's something that's
mm-hmm.
important to them.
Exactly.
And I wish the kids felt like they owned their education, because I think that's where we're losing them.
Exactly.
They feel like it's being pushed on them, it's being ordered down on them, instead of feeling like they can take their education and use it to get what they want.
Right. And where are they getting these thoughts and feelings that they don't need to go to school, that they don't need their education? You know, it's just, I don't know where they're getting it.
Well, I mean, first of all, I think the biggest thing has been the misconception with people like Mark Zuckerberg, you know, who can have a $1 million company while he's still in college and not really have to finish college.
Right.
You know, they see people like that who say, I was a millionaire when I was 16 because I created this software or because I created this computer program or because I designed this app, and now I'm making
right.
all this money.
Right.
It's kind of like saying I was a music star at 14 because I could sing. It wasn't anything
right.
I really did. And so that's
right.
that entitlement. Kids feel entitled to that. It isn't until you have people like Michael Jordan speak up and say, yes, I'm a great basketball player, but I worked my behind off to get here.
Exactly.
I practiced every day.
Right. Persevere and didn't get it.
Yeah, it's hard for kids. I mean, they want so much, and it's unfortunate that they don't feel like they've got to stay in order to do it.
Right. What are some of the biggest struggles you see with the children that you teach? And how old are they, first and second grade? Nine?
First and
nine?
Second grade, most of them are 6, 7, and 8.
Okay.
Because Michigan does allow kids to enter kindergarten prior to 6 years old, so we do have some kids who are as young as 6 years old in my classroom. Most of them are 7, 8, and occasionally I'll have a 9-year-old. But the hardest thing is that they have no control over their family.
Right.
You know, when Boyd was talking about the stories that he mentioned just a few minutes ago about what the kids were telling each other about what their home lives were like,
mm-hmm.
I still see that in my classroom. You know, the kids sit around and talk about mom and dad getting a divorce. And
right.
It comes out of left field for me.
Or who or something, yeah.
I don't know that it's coming. I'm not in their home, and yet it comes out of left field for me because I didn't expect it. And the kids now I'm dealing with, you know, their pain and their fear about, is mom or dad coming home tonight? Where is mom and dad going to sleep? Or even if they're not divorcing, mom and dad are now fighting. You know, mom's crying. So they're coming to school with that. I also see a lot of poverty. So I've got kids coming to school without food, making sure they're
right.
feeding them. You know, they're not going to be able to think, read, write, do math without it.
Right, exactly. I think that's a big problem, the poverty, even homelessness nowadays. You know, kids are coming to school with not very nice clothes or dirty clothes because they're homeless or because they're poor and they don't have food to eat, so they are hungry and they can't come and concentrate and don't have money to bring for lunch money, or there's so many different problems out there.
Yeah, and that's what I see most of these coming, the kids that I deal with every day, that's what they have, are more of survival needs that are outside of the classroom. Some certainly have a love and belonging need. They have that need for feeling a part of a family. They want to feel like they're loved. They want to feel like they're special. They want to feel like that they can be successful. There's probably the
I think that's something that every person longs for, you know, the love and feeling loved, feeling wanted, and wanting to be something.
Well, and I mean, from the educational standpoint, I mean, we've psychologically looked at those needs. I mean, we've had, you know, a variety of different theorists talking about them and how important they are. And, you know, it really does make a difference.
Right.
You know, like we've disconnected as we've not kept our you know, homes and communities together. You know, you may not know your neighbors these days. You may not speak to your neighbors. And
right.
when you do that, then you disconnect, the children disconnect. They don't have that relationship growing up that we did.
Right. Do you talk about these kind of issues with your students in school?
It depends on the age group of how things are discussed and what are discussed. One of the best ways to do it is with literature, because even with little kids, they can understand things. For example, I've been doing a teacher read book where I read to the students Pippi Longstocking.
Right.
Pippi lies a lot.
Yeah.
In the whole book, she lies a lot. And so we have a lot of conversation about that. We talk about she's lying.
Right.
But she's also got a good heart in that, you know, when some thieves were coming to steal from her, she ends up giving them money. She gives them food. So why does she do that? You know, so it's that conversation that has to be developmentally appropriate for these kids. But, yeah, it is something that we like to talk about with them. I think just yesterday I had a conversation with the kids, you know, about respect. You know, what does it mean, respect? And what words show respect? What actions
right.
show respect?
Do you ever talk to the kids about gangs and drugs?
Never at the age that is the first, second grade. Where we live, where I live in Michigan, is primarily, it's very high income, white, upper class type of community. And so the kids that are coming in don't see that very much. They don't have any experience with that. So our school in our county is very homogeneous type of grouping, whereas the kids, when they start going off to high school and you have more experience with other schools, then they get a little more with that.
Well, I know that may be true, but you can't always say that drugs aren't there in the richer communities, because they're everywhere.
Right.
The kids, I don't know if the kids, you know, see it or not, but we know that it's definitely out there, even though it may not be out in the open like, you know, in the inner city and different things like that.
With the drugs, most first, second graders don't understand. You know, if mom says, here, take this, that's what they take. They think an ice pack cures anything, and we go through ice packs and bandages like you wouldn't believe. Because that's all you have to do is an ice pack or bandage. My new one is a nice cold paper towel will help. You know, they get outside, they get hurt. So these kids aren't, it may be more I'm not saying it's not happening. I'm saying that most of my 6, 7, and 8-year-olds don't see that. They also probably don't see some of the other things that are obvious. Like they would not notice, you know, why they wouldn't, you know, why their mom and dad might say something about the color of someone's skin. They may not notice why, you know, mom and dad or their older brothers and sisters say something about who has more money than them. They don't notice those things, because they're so focused on, at 6 and 7, at least my experience in my school, it's been just more on, you know, making sure that they have the food, making sure that they're, you know, liked. That's their biggest issue. They want to know whether or not, you know, they're going to be invited to somebody's birthday party.
Right. And what are the ethnicity of the kids in your community, your classes?
Probably about 90% of the kids are white, European descent. I have a few kids who, like, for transfers, I have one student who's Asian. He's from Japan. I have one student who's from China. I have a couple of students who from South America or other Spanish-speaking countries. But most of them are coming from European countries, you know, who've been in the United States for a long period of time.
Right. You know, I was just thinking, we went and talked this last year to about, I think it was about 400 kids, third grade to fifth grade at one of the schools in Phoenix. And when I asked the kids how many of them knew what marijuana was, you'd be so surprised that almost every kid in there raised their hand.
Yeah, I could see more about
heroin,
the third grade.
There wasn't as many that heard about heroin. But I was just really surprised at all the kids that they knew so much.
Yeah, it's amazing to think that those things come into families even, let alone into school.
Definitely. I know, we know that, you know, obviously parents are your first teachers, and you need to learn, you know, a lot of these things at home even before you get to school.
Right.
Parents
right.
can't depend on the school teachers to raise their kids for them. They need to be, even when the kids are in school, they still need to be the first teachers, and these children need to learn, you know, at home. But then, you know, there's so many different situations, and I think I made the comment one time is that, you know, parents, when they're getting divorced, are forced by courts to go to parenting classes. But why aren't they getting parenting classes when they get married? So when they have children, they'll know how to handle the situations. And you know, why do they wait until they're divorced when their kids are half grown, you know? But sometimes, you know, parenting can be hard. Sometimes, you know, as parents, we don't always have the right answers. We don't always do the right things. We do what we know. And, you know, then again, though, you definitely have to learn at home.
Well, it's ironic. One of the things that we used to offer at my school was parenting classes. And you'd be surprised at how few parents showed up.
Right. I think if they knew the value of it, you know, even just the communication tools that you can learn to have with your children or how, you know, it would be so beneficial. And if everybody had to do it when they got married or before they had kids or while they were pregnant, it had to be part of your, you know, I don't know. But it just, everything seems so backwards. You know, they wait until you're getting divorced to make you go to parenting classes. And, you know, usually your kids are, like I said, half grown. So what's that going to do, you know?
The fighting has probably been going on before the divorce. So the kids probably are already having some issues.
Exactly. That's for sure. That's just funny.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, you already know. So we definitely, you know, now your second book, Ms. Melissa, can you tell the viewers what that book is about and where they can get that one at?
Okay, so I talked about the anthology, and then I mentioned the one book that is out right now called Second Time's a Charm, and that one is the one on divorce and about a lady who gets a divorce, and it's kind of a rough divorce. She ends up finding love again with her best friend's ex-husband, and, you know, when she had been with him, you know, when she was with her friend, friends tend to always kind of, I don't want to say bitch at people, but that's kind of what they do. And so these two girls would sit there and they'd gab about their husbands and all the things that were wrong about them. And now she's got to deal with this guy she's got this image of with what reality shows her. So it's a real interesting story about accepting someone for what you see in them and not what somebody else sees in them.
Right, exactly.
So there's that duality too.
Okay, sounds good.
I do have a third book coming out June 3rd. It's called Protecting His Wolf, and that one is more of a story about a girl who overhears a drug deal while she's at work and is set up for termination. She's going to be killed, and she finds love with a police officer who protects her and even brings her into his home to kind of keep her safe. So.
Exactly. So when that book get released, what are you looking for your readers to take from that book?
Well, what I'm hoping that they understand is that she's a strong character, even though she seems very meek and mild-mannered. I mean, she's had two or three attempts on her life, and yet she doesn't give up. And she doesn't run away from the situation. And I also really like how she stands up for what she believes in. I mean, the story does have an ending where the bad guys get caught. And I think that's important for them to hear that and know that, you know, it's important to stand up when you see wrong being done and say, this is wrong.
Bottom line, you know. And, do you have any other projects that you're working on that you would like for the viewers to know that you're working on right there in Michigan?
Yeah, I've got another book coming out that's the sequel to the short story in the anthology. This is one of the other sisters whose dad has Alzheimer's, and this is another sister who's dealing with her own gender issues. You know, she's always been attracted to women. And in certain areas, that's not acceptable either. And so she's trying to deal with that. I'm working on another story that will incorporate the idea of belief in God and the feeling of, yeah, there's some other person out there watching out for us, where one of the characters faces a life and death situation, and they learn by the end of the story that there is somebody out there who is able to protect them and bring their family closer together.
Right. Sounds like a winner, you know. So I'm going to pass the mic back to the missus and let her wrap up. We know you have to get to bed and get to that school in the morning and we just want to thank you, and we appreciate you from coming on the show tonight. And do you have any last words, any shout-outs you would like to give anyone?
Well, if anybody wants to find out any more about these books or any more about me, I write about my blended family. I write about how the holidays are a military campaign as we're trying to figure out whose family is going where. Please check out my blog and my website. My website is www.melissakeir.com. And my blog is on that website, and I talk about the guilt of being a mom and being a nag and having my son tell me that, and talk about the loss of my mom and not feeling like I was good enough for my dad sometimes. And I also talk about my writing and different things. And there's always contests going on, so I'd love to have them stop by.
That sounds like a winner. And once again, we just want to thank you for coming on the show and sharing your story and your message. And once again, get that website out again to the viewers.
It's www.melissakeir.com, MelissaKeir.com.
All right, that sounds like a winner. And we're going to close out the show. And we just want to say once again, thank you for taking the time out to stay up late in Michigan to come on the show. And you get you some rest where you can get ready to go in there tomorrow with a fresh mind and fresh ideas for the kids.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And get the positive message to give them. So thank you for what you do.
And thank you so much, and we really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you once again, Melissa. And we are going to go out tonight with a song called All For You, a young new artist out of Detroit, Michigan. He's with Grand Slam Records, and this is his first single release. You can purchase it on iTunes and Amazon. And we're going to go out tonight with this song, and have a great week, and join us back next Wednesday night.
Everything is all for you.
Everything's like in my body is brand new. see the mirror, don't lie. Feeling like that guy tonight, so.
From the ballet, seven cent bottles of Moscato and rosé. All of it was okay, okay, okay.
So baby, what you gonna do for me? Cause
everything is all for you. All for you.
All for you.
All for you.
You.
Everything I do when it's all tonight. Everything is all for you.
Everything's
all for you.
VIP never felt so lovely. Drinks never looked so bubbly. Don't you just love me? From the club to the telly, what's up? Private suite, can't nobody interrupt. Perfect night for the both of us. And this is how it started out. I'm loving everything you do for me. That's why
everything is all for you. Oh, oh, oh,
oh,
you.
Oh, for you.
Oh, 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 you.
Everything
you do when
it's all
tonight.
Baby, it's all.
Everything is all for you. You know that it's all for you, baby.
Everything is all for you.
Oh, 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 oh.
The way that it goes.
All for you.
You know that it's all for you, baby.
Everything is all for you.
Oh, 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 oh.
Everything I do
is everything is all for you.
Everything is all for you.